This is Fresnolandia. I'm Jordan Maddox, one of your hosts, and today we're sharing a special episode with you all. Last week, Danielle and I took a trip to Bakersfield with Reza Asimi, a developer here in Fresno who has worked to build downtown, both residential and commercial, to meet Austin and Anna Smith, developers who are building infill housing in downtown Bakersfield more successfully than really any other developers within the Central Valley, to have a conversation about their stories, the opportunities that each of our downtowns have, the challenges that we face, like code that was designed for development along the fringes of our cities, what their visions are for their respective cities, and how we can best learn from each other. On Fresnolandia today, we made a trip to Bakersfield. We're sitting in this beautiful room in downtown Bakersfield. Austin and Anna Smith and Reza Asimi. To start, I thought it would be fun for you guys to just share how you got into the world of infill development and thinking about residential development in downtown. So maybe we'll start with the locals. Maybe Anna, Austin, if you could start by telling us how you got in this work.
How we got into this work, it was roundabout, I think, as most stories are. So Austin and I started dating when I moved back to Bakersfield after college, and I was testing out whether I wanted to go to law school. So I was working at a law firm, and he was working for his dad during the building boom, essentially. His dad is a developer and engineer. And we started dating, and then I decided I did want to go to law school, so we both ended up moving to San Francisco. He was going to get his urban planning master's at San Jose State, and I went to UC Hastings to get my law degree. And so we lived in San Francisco. It felt like the mecca of all that was walkable and urban. And we just loved it there, honestly. It was a great experience. And then we both got jobs in downtown LA and moved actually to Pasadena and took the Gold Line into downtown LA. We had the ideal LA commute. We did not have to drive it. We were living these like consumer-driven like corporate lives and felt a little empty, surprised ourselves, I think, and decided to move back to Bakersfield and start a development firm. We called it Sage Equities, which was very aspirational at the time. There were no equities. It was just
a sage idea.
A sage idea.
There we go.
Yeah. Let me ask one question, because I think we think about this a lot. We think about brain drain or people not coming back and bringing their talents back to the Valley. Can you talk about the decision to move back, what that looked like?
Yeah, I think I would go back to when we started dating after we'd get off work, we would meet with our friend who became the architect that we work with on all our projects. And we would meet at this 90s coffee shop named Dagny's that we used to hang out to. But we would dream about, oh, someday if we could build cool stuff in downtown Bakersfield. And at that time it was like, that's not going to happen. But then eventually we were able to figure out how to fast forward 10 years. Then we were able to move back and actually make it happen.
Yeah.
Reza, I've known you for quite some time, and you've been around many years in downtown Fresno and the pioneer of a lot of downtown development. So how did you get your start?
That would be 1999. So I wanted to build something that was a live, work, and also show space for artists. As a painter, I thought the biggest kind of struggles we have are a place you're living that you can also use as a studio space and that you can also take control in as a show space. So that became the Pearl Building, which was the old Red Cross building, a small 3,000 square foot red brick building there, and created that into four artist live, work, and show spaces. That would have opened, let's see, in 2001. That would have been, so that was that first.
This is before the 180 freeway was even built at this point, right?
Yeah, Adam Longotti actually did a plein air painting of when they were doing the freeway when no one was working one day, and I have that. We traded paintings.
Oh, wow.
Of a painting, and it has actually...
You have a painting of the 180 freeway as they were building?
Being built,
that's
yeah.
Amazing.
And he did it plein air, actually sitting in the middle of it.
Wow.
When it wasn't a freeway. Yeah. It was being built. And what was really cool is the silos, which are now gone, are in the background. In the painting. Yeah. So it even holds more kind of sentiment, because that was sad to see those. That skyline changed quite a bit.
So you started built as an artist yourself, building live work units for other artists. But you've now expanded, and how many homes have you built in your portfolio at this point?
I'm not sure. It's done everything from ground up, multifamily, to mixed use, to historic buildings, to non-historic, really cool old buildings. Some of my favorites would be Theater 3, where Jeffrey Scott is, where JSA is. Broadway Lofts would definitely be one of my favorite projects. Just the amount of... That one was fun because we hit the recession. Not that part wasn't fun, but no one had work. So I was able to take that project, which was the tail, which was actually overlapped Ironbird Lofts also. So there's a lot of aspects of Ironbird that actually got upgraded. So all the windows became commercial, custom made by San Joaquin Glass. Like, literally was able to put a lot more money in because everything became a lot cheaper. And when you look at Broadway Lofts, the kitchens were all custom, welded on site and powder coated. Everything down to the drawers was custom made, concrete counters. The wrought iron work was all hand forged. That was a unique time. I wouldn't be able to build that like that today and make it make sense. So some of those would be my favorites, along with Sun Stereo and the new one, The Garage. I think that's going to be a really fun project on the corner there.
That's a good... Can you talk a little bit about the properties you two have worked on here and the kind of vision that you have for downtown Bakersfield?
Yeah, I guess we started out with our first project. Our architect calls it transitional urban housing because it's not a fully what you think of as stacked flats with an elevator interior corridor building. Our first project was 17th Place Townhomes, and it's 44 units of townhomes where you have three floors. You drive into your garage and then enter your unit, and you're within your unit on those three floors. You share sidewalls.
The gateway drug.
Exactly. Okay. We just had to prove to people that you could live in a multifamily housing project. Like, our whole dream was to create luxury market rate housing downtown, which had not existed in decades, if not maybe a century. I mean, just nobody had done it down here.
Yeah.
So we were definitely doing something kind of crazy. A lot of people told us we were crazy. They still do, but less and less as we go on. So that was our first project. And then a couple years ago, we completed the Q, which is the building we're sitting in right now. Our office is located next to the lobby at the Q, but it's 49 units here. And then we have 918, which is our third project, and it's 40 units. So we're getting somewhat denser as we go on, and then we have three other projects that we're working on currently in the same neighborhood downtown.
So what's the big vision for you guys? What's the romantic vision of what you want downtown to be?
Well, we'd see it happen. When we built the first project, we didn't necessarily know what would happen next. We didn't realize that a lot of retail would start to come in, and that...
How fast was that? What was the time gap?
So the first one was Cafe Cement was right across the street, and it happened at the same time as we opened the townhomes. But then there were other restaurants that started to come in within a couple of years, and that property was built 8 years ago. So now there's been enough time that the word is out about downtown, and there's more interest and more commercial uses moving downtown.
Yeah, I mean, it's truly a neighborhood. This Eastchester is truly a neighborhood now, where you really can walk to most things that you need in a few blocks, which is our dream. We'd like to fully realize that dream. I feel like we've touched on it and gotten a few blocks to feel like that. We'd like to expand that more. And our dream was always this infill housing that feels luxury in an area that maybe didn't always feel that way.
Yeah.
Both of you have worked in Central Valley downtowns that have had a lot of headwinds against the downtowns. Both of our cities are very known for their suburban sprawl and pulling people out away from the downtown of the city. Reza, maybe start, I'd love to start with you. Mm-hmm. How have you been able to sell your vision of downtown to really skeptical people in Fresno who don't believe that it's possible?
I feel like I don't. And I think I've said this probably, I'm sure you've heard me say this. I feel like there's something in Fresno for everybody, right? Whatever part you like. And I feel like there's so many people who are into the urban, who get it, and we're always going to have the negativity and the online keyboard bashing and everything else. And I always think, I don't feel like I need to convince someone. They'll see it eventually, or maybe they won't, and that's okay too. So there's something I've always liked to phrase. It, I think, sums it up the best. I always think downtown was different back in 2000, right? The freeway wasn't there. The stadium wasn't there. A lot of stuff just wasn't there. Broadway still went all the way through. There wasn't the IRS building there, which was actually better. But I loved it then, which is why I went there. I loved the way it felt. I loved the living right there. It was a ghost town at night. It was, without getting into too much detail, it was a really interesting things to watch if you cracked your blinds going on. It was different. But I loved it then. And I love it now. But it's not, and there's so many moments in between when I think about its story. When Tokyo Gardens would have all the bands come through. And those were like, I call them the Rademacher days, when Broadway Studios just opened. Before Broadway Studios, when there was 8th Street, which was dilapidated and about to fall down, we were going to demo the building anyway, so let a bunch of artists use it for a year. And no holds barred. Do whatever you want inside. There were so many of those things that I feel like there's so many good memories I have of all these different moments. And so sometimes I'll be sitting with close friends and they'll say, yeah, it's just different now. And I go, it's different because we're relating to them, but it's always going to be different. It's always going to change. 5-10 years from now, it's going to be different too. So I loved it then. I love it now. I'm sure I'll love it in another 20 years. So I don't ever see not doing stuff down there. And downtown still has these areas that I feel like it's like Mural District still, that's one of the areas closest to my heart. I feel like it's still got so much work to be done. Brewery District has happened, and it's just a block or so, but it's happened so much faster than I thought. Sun Stereo, I had just started construction and pandemic hit. That wasn't that long ago. And what have we been open? Maybe 3 years there now or so. And now the block is pretty much filled out. And then you have the area that I think is one of the most exciting areas that I love personally downtown, which is like the south of 41. Eventually we're going to see things happen there, which is going to be really cool. So yeah, I think it's got an interesting future. But I loved it back in 99, 2000, just the way it was. It was perfect too.
If you didn't attend a party in the early 2000s at Broadway Studios or some other random warehouse, like, I feel like you missed out on a Fresno experience.
Yeah, and my first experience, do you want me to tell this? I'll keep it quick, but was Tokyo Gardens. I mentioned that to you earlier, and I don't know, I was 19, 18 years old, and back in town visiting, and was looking for, it was a warehouse party down there. Never could find it, and it was winter time. It was one of those Fresno, like, thick, like magical fog nights where you can't see a block away. And anyway, we were trying to find a spot when I was needing to use the restroom real quick. And I see these neon lights. Like, imagine coming up on that through the fog. And it was Tokyo Gardens. And so we get out, and there was a guy like in a tux in front. And we go in, and it was such a mismatch. This must have been like 95, 94, of people in suits and punk rockers and everybody else. And that was my first experience with downtown. So I always think back to that. And that was amazing.
Totally.
It was a ghost town down there. But it was amazing. Same way as amazing now, like to walk around down there or to go grab something to eat or grab something to drink in the Brewery District and see the neon lights on the street and all that stuff coming together. So hopefully we'll see also in the future, I think we will see probably Mural District and Brewery District start connecting. I think that's one of the things that will logically will probably happen next over time.
Do you think similarly about naysayers and pushback and how
we're
Bakersfield has an aggressive
our head.
Culture too?
We're over here voraciously nodding our head as you're saying that, because I think we feel the same way. You can't and you shouldn't try to convince everybody. It's almost a silly exercise.
It's a waste of time.
We're honestly too busy to care what people think most of the time. Like, people can complain. Like, we're doing what we love. We get to do our dream job. It's a lot. It's a hell of a lot of work, but it's worth it every day. Don't really care if it's not for everybody.
And it's way more interesting. If you had everybody down here, we would just be another strip mall. So.
Yeah. I love that there's a high barrier to entry downtown. Yeah. Like, I know that sounds terrible, but I think you have to really want it to do something down here. I also love your description of downtown Fresno and your experiences there over time, because I think that's what's beautiful about an organic downtown. The best downtowns are authentic and they're changing constantly. So it's not like a set in stone strip mall. Like, it's something that is organic. It changes. Like, our experiences in the early 2000s downtown are completely different than our experiences now, but we look back on them fondly. Like, our first date was at the Greek Food Festival, which was downtown. That's so cool. And there is some consistency because that thing is still going, but it's totally changed. I also think downtown should be a place where everybody feels like they can find their spot, and it's open-minded and diverse, and I think that's what makes them beautiful. So I think that's important too.
Reza, can you talk a little bit, we talked about this earlier, some of the challenges building infill housing in Fresno that you've encountered? Because we're having these broad discussions right now with SEDA on the table and pushing development out, and infill housing is often propped up as a solution to that or an alternative, but you've encountered obstacles, and I'd be curious for you to talk about that.
Absolutely.
And then, yeah. You know, you guys to respond as well.
Absolutely, yeah. And I really liked what you were saying right there. And I always say development is a freight train. It's not an Amtrak. And like, we all want to go faster, but it needs to happen organically. It is slow. And especially in an urban environment, the healthiest way for it to grow is just let it happen organically. Infill.
It was a bribe. Describe.
I love infill.
And, like, how much time do I have?
I love infill. There's
maybe a broad stroke.
The saying in town, people always say they don't go south of Shaw. I've always said I don't go north of Shaw. But actually, I have one time.
One time.
Craycroft. Because it was a historic building that was going to get torn down. So I went north of Shaw.
Okay. Not to River Park, to Craycroft.
Yeah.
Got it.
To try to basically to keep that building standing.
Which is in the district of Fresno we call Northwest Fresno.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
So I've never developed. Actually, I can take it farther south than that. Let's just keep it Shaw because that's the saying. But it would actually be farther south. I love infill. I love old areas. I love old buildings. So that's what attracted me from day one. And I have a lot of admiration for both of you sitting here because you guys do ground up. And when we were talking earlier, you were mentioning how much you love ground up. So the ground up I just finished in January, downtown, the Mural District Lofts. I'll be blunt, I do not ground up. But that's what kind of makes infill something for everybody, right? Some people will love doing that infill and that ground up. And then there's going to be someone like me who just loves the creativity in getting lost in old structure and taking it down and deconstruction and reconstruction is some of my favorite. Now, going to what you're also asking is, it's a pain. I like it, but I can see why a lot of people don't want to deal with it. From the beginning of your infrastructure issues, which has held up almost every single project, Mural District Lofts was shelved for a year and a half because the city wouldn't back off on their infrastructure requirements. Mm-hmm. And me redoing all the infrastructure, which was in the seven figures, it's 28 units. You killed the project. Mm-hmm. It took a year and a half to get, finally. And I had council pass it, which is how we got around it. That was before Jerry, by the way. But there's a lot of challenges like that. And I think a lot of those have gotten easier over time if we take it back. If I take it back to my first project back in 99, 2000, gutted the building, did environmental, drew plans, submitted, and the city kicked it right back out. So you can't live in a commercial building. So I hired a lobbyist and a consultant. So I was 25 years old. I didn't know how to get through that one. But I knew I was sitting on a gutted building. So it hasn't been the... And I think a lot of people... there's a lot of things to deal with. And there's a lot of obstacles. And there's no blame on anyone. I think it's just... We've made it more of a priority in recent years. Downtown's always a buzzword for administrations and things. But I think our administration now is really focused and committed. Our last one also was, but getting to that point is not easy. So you have a developer and they're used to how they do things, and infill takes a lot of time. Man, I don't know how it is in Bakersfield, but especially in the urban environment, it's in a lot of things that you end up taking care of, sidewalks and alleys. And I'll tell you, on my last one, thankfully the city got me through, but I think the mayor actually got me through, but the city wanted me to repave the whole alley at the end. There's a lot of things, and that's all cost. And so sometimes it's already hard to make things pencil out. And when you keep throwing costs over and over at them, I think that turns a lot of people off. And you don't have economies of scale for the most part. You don't have real big plots of land. You can't get economies of scale to keep your costs down.
Because you're taking all these infrastructure costs, but your last project was 28 units. A typical apartment developer in the suburbs is building 200, 300 units at a time, but may have the same infrastructure costs. So it's just, that's what you're talking
about. Luckily now the city is taking care of infrastructure in some of downtown, but that that's it. That infrastructure hasn't been maintained. Ratepayers have been paying, but we have not been fixing that infrastructure like other areas of town. That's the problem. And also, I feel like our checklist boxes of when something gets submitted probably scares a lot of people off, especially, luckily, I've been at it long enough now. You can figure it out or know who to call that can help you through it or these type of things. But imagine if you're coming in for the first time and you want to do something and you get hit and you see these, all these shit of what you're responsible for, you're probably not going back.
Do you resonate with what he's describing?
Yeah, we're thinking if someone had told us the amount of things that were required for infill development of ground up multifamily downtown, we wouldn't have done it. So it's probably good we didn't know, because we had this passion and we knew we'd figure it out and we are problem solvers, but in some sense, ignorance is bliss, but you figure it out as you go.
Yeah, the city has the right, here and in Fresno, I would say the city has the right heart and the right policy, and they want things to happen downtown. They get that infill's better than just sprawling and continuing to chew up farmland and all that. But it's where the rubber meets the road. It's where the plan checker is calling you out and saying, you need to repave the alley, or you need to put in storm drain, you need to do this for that. And instead, we need to flip that and think, how can we make this as easy as possible for people to come downtown and make investments and develop real estate? So I think that culture shift and that shift of mind is the biggest piece of it that needs to happen. The high level policy is there. It's where the rubber meets the road.
And on that point specifically, how much of that is because in both of our cities for decades, for the last, what, 8 decades, the whole city infrastructure has been focused on making development on the fringe as easy as possible. And it's a different skill set. It's a different, could you talk about that a little bit and how you see that?
Yeah, completely. The code is written for, at least here, I think in Fresno, there's more detail about downtown, but the code is completely written for suburban development. So one thing we ran into is retaining water on site. We have a half acre site for an infill housing project. We don't have room to build a sump to retain the water. Like, the water needs to go into storm drain and then into the canal or wherever it needs to go. We don't have room to treat the water on site. But the city code says you need to go to a sump.
But so that, they wanted us to take over 2+ parking spots, which is huge downtown for a small development, to make our own sump. And we finally won that battle. But again, things like that take time and money to work through, and they're unknowns. Like, you never know what each project has had its own unique set of challenges that we've had to work through that you would have never known were there. So that part is a little scary, but it's worth it.
I'd love to hear more from you both about the city culture around downtowns. Reza in Fresno, and we've talked about this quite a bit, the city has put a lot of effort into downtown with very mixed results. Can you say more about your perspective on how that's played out as a developer who should supposedly benefit from a lot of the city investment?
Yeah, I do feel like there's, like you guys touched on, there are things that have gotten better, like in Fresno, but what you mentioned is almost the same. Yeah. It wasn't until Ashley's administration that we started creating code that you can actually build these projects, right? It was difficult, but, and also I feel like the city, for quite a while now, we have been pro downtown, but we've put a lot of resources in other places. Also, when I think about the amount of consultants and studies and all of feasibility studies, and it would be actually interesting to know, let's just take 20 years, make it a nice and even number, how much has been spent on that, and how much of a difference could we have seen if we would have, let's say, helped mom and pop small businesses open.
Yeah. Good thing those consultants are cost effective. They don't overcharge ever.
No. And we're continuing to take that approach. I think we just, to me, some of the stuff is really logical and simple. And that's maybe just how my head works. But downtown needs to be clean at all times. We could do a better job at that. Downtown, I think we should focus not on Bass Pros and chain shops and big stuff like that. We need mom and pops local. That's what makes a fabric of a downtown. But we, as a city, sometimes I feel like we're grasping, this is like the shiny thing, this is better. When really, no, the better is the people who want to move down there, but maybe they don't have the funding to open, but it's going to be awesome when they do. There's only so many tenants I can try to help. And I can't do the build out for all of them either. I can't, one, take the risk or afford that or finance that. Where's that going to come from? And there's so many tenants, I feel, and shops that want to open that the only thing holding them back is funding. Mm-hmm. I feel like as a city, over, if we look at over the years, we've had a lot of funding go into a lot of places that didn't make any difference. Mm-hmm. Maybe we just need to put it directly into who's actually making downtown move forward. I can enjoy and build what I think is the most beautiful thing, right? Take this old building and deconstruct and reconstruct. But at the end of the day, if nobody's inside of it, it's just a pretty empty building. It has no soul. It has no life. I think we need to also pay more attention to the tenants coming in and the people who want to come in. And I think we need to help that. And there's only so much I can do, because at the end of the day, the numbers have to pencil. I think that's where we could put a whole lot more effort as a city.
That's a great point. Just to give credit where it's due, the city of Bakersfield has made facade improvement grants and grants to local businesses to open here downtown. And for the most part, they've been used. This program just started in the past, I'd say, 3 years or so. So it doesn't have a track record. I'm sure there will be missteps, but I completely agree. That's where money's most well spent.
Yeah, can you tell our Fresno listeners a little bit about what Eastchester is?
It's a neighborhood we just started calling East Chester. It's east of Chester. It just took off.
How very developer of you to rename a neighborhood.
But talk about the life that was created, because we're just walking around.
It's that little bit of a light industrial area just east of what would be considered like the central core of downtown Bakersfield. Like the Padre Hotel is a big anchor for downtown, and it's on 18th Street just west of Chester. And then we are basically... our project started just east of Chester on 18th. So you can see the Padre like neon lights from our projects, which we love, because that was a very successful boutique hotel. It was an old renovation, but...
How many years old is that now? How long has that been here?
It was completed in 2010. So
2010. Okay, 15 years. Yeah.
2010. I think it's like 15 though now.
15 years.
Yeah. Oh, you said 10. Yeah, it's 15.
Do you feel
years.
Like the Padre was catalytic to a lot of your work?
I think so. I think it inspired a lot of development and a lot of people to come downtown. I also think it's like this outside validation that we're talking about. Like, it took maybe this San Diego developer who's very successful and financially driven, but also has great aesthetic. And he and his company really had a vision for that building. He basically just happened to be in town having dinner at Wool Growers, and somebody showed him this empty building, and he was like, man, this would be a cool hotel. So he basically bought it and renovated it. And it's a long story. Like, it had its ups and downs, but he basically has created a very successful model for what can happen downtown. And we get a lot of outside people coming through town, you know, driving up to Yosemite or whatever, and they stop at the Padre because it's on the map. So I think so. I think it inspired Austin, and I don't know if we would be doing what we're doing if it didn't exist.
And we have other developers that tell us that they wouldn't be doing what they're doing without what we're doing. So it's the butterfly effect of all these good things happen when people jump in.
Can you see that when it's happening?
Yeah. That's honestly the most inspiring part of what we do is seeing people make investments downtown from the investor side, and then also businesses moving downtown that other people want to be a part of this. And yes, it's not for everyone, but it's a niche and it serves a certain part of our community. And I think it attracts businesses and people to want to move here and be a part of it.
I mean, I have this thing about downtown, and I want to be soft about it like Austin is. And I respect that like, it doesn't have to be for everyone. And I get that. And I'm okay with people criticizing it. But I also feel like we should, as a community, and I think Fresno, you guys from Fresno would agree, as a community, we should prioritize downtown though, because it's more important than a lot of neighborhoods outside of downtown. Number one, there have been lots of studies that have shown a dense project downtown creates a better tax basis. Like, you're going to get more revenue from a project done downtown than a big suburban development. It just doesn't trickle down like one downtown would. Again, like, it inspires other businesses. There's so much that's not even quantifiable, but I can tell you for sure, like, our projects have a bigger impact than one in the suburbs. And that's why we're doing this. It's harder. But I think the city government and code and everything should reflect that recognition. When it creates our whole vision is to create a walkable downtown that's 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. That's why we're into residential, because we think we need it. We saw that as the missing piece downtown. not every downtown has that as their missing piece, but there were not people with lots of disposable income living downtown. And we knew that was needed to finish this puzzle of like downtown, like the economy. And that trickles down to the entire region. So I just think people don't value the impact of downtown as much as they should. Even if you're not a big downtown person, I think you should recognize that impact.
Don, do you think people see that in Fresno? Some people?
I think people get it on a theoretical level, potentially. We hear how many of the last mayors that we've had in Fresno have used the language of being pro-downtown? At least four. The last four?
Four.
But I think it saying the rhetoric and then putting in the practice the things that are actually needed to make that a reality are two very different things. And I don't think we've fully figured out. I think the infrastructure money that we've gotten from the state, which is almost $300 million at this point, that's a promise. And every developer I've talked to in Fresno has said that's probably going to be one of the biggest game changers. When I worked in Ashley Swearengen's administration, we really thought that if we just changed the zoning code, that somehow that would help. I'm so naive now to think that zoning could actually change things.
It did help, though.
I'm sure it does.
That was huge.
It's a big piece.
It did help a lot. But I feel, excuse me, it's not like a one or a two or a three problem, and that's the problem.
Yeah.
It's probably 15 or 20 different problems to solve. So it's the infrastructure. It's the financing at the end of the day. There's so many different pieces of this puzzle. So I think as a city or an administration, it's almost like each one is tackling different things. Mm-hmm. Like the one right now is really focused on housing and really trying to get housing going, which we really need. It's also a challenging time because of cost. Yeah, downtowns aren't easy, especially when they've been forgotten that long. I don't know how long Bakersfield, or if it was forgotten, but Fresno's was...
Yeah.
I'm 25 years in now, and I could spend another 25 down there, which I probably will.
Jordan grew up here. He could probably speak to it, too. Like, in the 80s, 90s, like, growing up here, you didn't go downtown. Like,
well, I went downtown for my punk rock show at the pizza parlor.
Your mom didn't know, right?
Yeah, my mom would drive away very fast
once
you dropped
like
me off. It wasn't,
the place to be. Like, it wasn't. Yeah. You didn't hang out in the middle of the night, like, in an alley in downtown Bakersfield. I hope you didn't. Anyway, but it's come a long way. But it definitely had some, I would say, a good decade there where it was pretty sketchy.
How do you guys make it pencil down here? That's the big push that we hear is, how do you make it pencil? How do you make it work? How do you deal with the costs? Is there demand for this kind of market rate housing downtown? Could you talk about that?
Yeah, the demand is pretty large, we found, and we had a discussion earlier about the number of units we're building, and that's relatively small for a city, 500,000 people, that we can easily absorb a couple hundred units, and we haven't had, I think the proof of concept has been that we filled the units that we have already and continue to develop more.
Yeah, I mean, our projects, we started out with a syndication model. So basically, we take investors, private investors. But that was also part of the vision, because I think it helps get local buy-in. And it helps us keep local money, like investors' money, local, which is also one of our, like, missions of our company, is to get people to invest in their own community. So while that is a lot of work, I think it was a helpful step in this process of getting people to, you put your eyes where your money is. You're going to put your money downtown, you start paying more attention to it, you care more about it.
Opportunity for you guys to tell a story too, to get the community. Yeah. I think that's part of it too,
education
is selling a vision
it,
as well.
Yeah.
It's an investment that you can see it, you can touch it. It's not going to sit in the stock market somewhere. You can watch it go up and down, but it's very tangible, and you can drive by it and you can text the NRI and ask about it. And there's also a lot of benefits that people who... Not everyone's invested in real estate outside their personal residence. And there's a lot of it, like, I think we talk to a lot of working professionals that they're busy and they just delegate to their financial planner and don't necessarily invest in real estate. And it's an opportunity to be passive, but still get the tax and cash flow benefits from commercial real estate.
Yeah, and our projects, and we mentioned this before, but they're opportunity zone projects. So we utilize the federal program, the opportunity zone program. All of our projects here in East Chester are located in this like zone that the federal government has designated, and our investors get significant tax breaks because of that if they place a capital gain. So that's been a big part of helping us get these projects built.
What do you feel like makes developing in downtown Bakersfield different than if you were going to try a project in Fresno?
I would imagine the market is relatively similar. I haven't studied it, but I would imagine that the vacancy rates and the rents and the demand and everything is very similar because we're in the Central Valley and the economies are similar. What would be different is just us personally in our capacity of not knowing everyone and how to make it happen. That's your role as the developer. You're the quarterback and knowing all, how to put all the pieces together. So that would, there'd be a learning curve there.
I think also just the way the downtown is laid out in Fresno is different. It is a bit more spread out. So our downtown is, everything is somewhat walkable. It's only a few block radius around what most would consider the central core. So while we are in a separate neighborhood east of the big Padre Hotel and the big city government buildings, it's all walkable. So that's helped us in a sense. And I think, I'm sure there's lots of spots in Fresno that would be ripe for new multifamily development, but I think you want to be close to stuff. You want to, especially if you're trying something new that's like high-end luxury, people aren't going to move if they can't walk to a coffee shop or a bar. Like, it's just, there's certain parameters, like we just innately know because we've lived in urban areas. That's part of the appeal. That's the amenity they're hoping for. A lot of our residents moved from out of town from more urban areas. So we got to create at least a little micro neighborhood that feels like home for them. Yeah.
Reza, what do you see as being different about Bakersfield compared to Fresno in your experience?
I'd say I would agree that from what I've seen today, the proximity. So what was really neat when we where we parked and then after also where we walked and we did that loop, that you have this stretch that reminds me of Brewery District, except it's way bigger going down, right? Where you have all kinds of shops and stuff going on right there. So I think we need more of that. We have I think what we have is more clusters. So we have a block here, or Mural District has like some stuff going on here. But we don't have block on block on block where, let's say, you're going four blocks and it's continuous and has stuff going on. We don't quite have that yet. We're a little more scattered. And I think part of that is it is that we are more spread out, too. We have these like almost districts and we're spread out, which I think can be really strong for Fresno in the long run, because we'll have one day we will have true districts. You go over here, you go over there. And it is neat these days, actually, they have the bus trolley thing. So you can hop on it and go. Well, it takes you to Fresno State, too, but you could go from Mural District to Brewery District. Mm-hmm. Just take that little route, which I think is great. We still have a long ways to go. I think that's the thing we need to realize, is that each of these moments along the way are beautiful, but we're not done yet. It's not done yet.
Jordan, you've lived in both cities. What are your cultural observations on the similarities and differences?
Yeah, that's a good question. I feel sad because I missed what Austin and Anna did. And my experience of downtown is much closer to Reza's, which is grungy, those alleys that Anna was referring to. I was in those alleys doing God knows what. But that made Bakersfield feel romantic to me, of having those early experiences in the same way that Reza did. And I think Bakersfield has some cultural perceptions that are true, but they're not as ubiquitous in each area as you would think. And I think I wish we could learn better from each other, because I think we're more similar than we think. Mm. I do think
we both have a shared inferiority complex.
Right, right, yes. I think I definitely resonate with what Reza's saying about just the kind of patchiness of downtown. And I don't know, it just feels like we have a much longer runway. And here, the condensed nature of it is fun, but I think, yeah, I don't have deep formulated thoughts other than I think we need to learn from each other more. And that's why I'm so glad that we were able to do this and sit with the three of you in a room and just hear each other, because I don't think we need to do a better job of listening up and down the valley and thinking regionally and less in our little pockets. Yeah. And so that's what I would say. I don't know if that's a cultural observation, more just like a exhortation to talk to each other. Yeah.
Austin, something you told me when we talked a few weeks ago was that the city culture, maybe not in policy as much as culture, is a little bit more hands-off when it comes to downtown. Mm-hmm. Fresno has.
Yeah.
How has that been helpful in some ways?
I think in the sense that Fresno accomplished more than we did during redevelopment. You built the baseball stadium. We thought about building a baseball stadium. We looked into it, couldn't find the money. It didn't happen. That's just one example. But at Bruce Point, we did build, we have a hockey arena. We have things like that. We have the nice river walk that I mentioned that was accomplished in redevelopment. But there wasn't as much housing built in the core. So a lot of these underutilized lots or small light industrial buildings, which is where we found the ability to develop these housing projects. Maybe a lot of that was taken up in Fresno. I'm just speculating, but
it's something we have a lot of in Fresno, speculating.
Right. Yeah, I mean, that's my kind of distant view of Fresno, is that the city was a lot more active in redevelopment and successful in certain ways, but then that limits the private sector's ability to do things, whereas here it was just a little bit more wide open.
Sometimes the hands-off nature of the government here, though, like the way they operate, is helpful in that we get to educate them. So I think sometimes I like that we're the first person telling them how this should go, because we get to tell them and they don't have too many preconceived notions about what it should look like. So I think that can be helpful. It has been helpful.
The zoning here also, I will say one thing that was very visionary is there were no form-based codes or anything that was formulaic, but there was this very open, there's a central commercial zone and a central business zone. And they're basically allow 180-foot high buildings, which obviously doesn't work, but it was very laissez-faire in that sense. We didn't have to include inclusionary housing. There was no design review or any of those things, which are usually, from a planner, design, architecture perspective, those are usually things that you want. But if you're the developer, and you actually care about those things, it's ideal, because then you're not going before a board that's going to give you their opinion about this and that. So we work with our architect and engineers, and we all work together to make the design and the way our projects interface with the street to be as pedestrian oriented and everything as possible. But we weren't told to do that by the city. So
I think it allows for more organic projects that weave into the fabric of each neighborhood. So we are allowed, because we don't have design standards, like we're allowed to make our projects look however we want. And that means they all look really different, and we try to reflect the neighborhood around them. So even though we're going to have five projects like within walking distance of each other, hopefully the plan is that they all look really different. I think that's better for the long-term neighborhood. I think people are happy with that. But if we had design standards, they might look more similar. That might not be great. But yeah, I think it's better in the long-term, things like that.
No, I agree. I agree, though. I think everything should look different.
Yeah.
It's more authentic.
Yeah. Something, Reza, we talked about a bit earlier is this pressure in some ways that we've put in Fresno on our downtown. And that pressure has come about through so many iterations of redevelopment and planning and redevelopment again and another plan. And now we have high-speed rail coming, and we're the first high-speed rail station in America. And a lot of speculators have come to wait for that potential that we haven't quite reached yet. And so I'm just curious, that's my perspective on some of the things that are holding us back, but I'm curious how you see it.
I agree.
Yeah,
I agree. I think we have, unfortunately, a lot of speculation and eyes on Fresno, seeing where things are going. Because here's the thing, too. On a really positive note, I feel like there is more happening literally now in downtown than I've ever seen in 25 years that I've been working
down. Incredible.
It's incredible. It's incredible when I keep hearing stuff and go, wait, I didn't know that. And I'm like, when you don't know half the stuff that's going on, and then you hear about it, and you're like, how did I not know that?
Did you hear
I'm
about
literally down here every day.
Did you hear about the basement parties at the Crest?
No.
Yeah. Okay. That's a thing.
Basement There's parties an example. At the Crest?
Yeah. It's like there's so much stuff going on, and it doesn't feel like all that long ago that wasn't like that.
There was like that one party that everyone knew about.
And you knew everyone even by face.
Absolutely.
If they were down there. We're in the best spot I think we've ever been as a downtown. And I think it's only getting better. And I think it's exponentially happening faster and faster. And I don't mean by mass quantities, but incrementally is happening faster and faster. So unfortunately, a byproduct of that are speculators, which actually holds it back. Because one of the difficult things I'm sure it's the same thing in here in Bakersfield, is loosening buildings or loosening land. That's not always the easiest thing to do, is getting people to sell.
Yeah.
I'm sure I don't even need to name them. There's a lot of examples.
Amen. But if you did name names, we wouldn't stop you.
How do you guys get people to sell?
We can't sometimes. We have had an experience where we were able to pitch a property owner and sell them on our vision of downtown. We connected with them. We've had a few experiences like that, and I think that's been helpful with our investors as well. I think they see our passion. They know we're going to figure it out because what we're doing is not the easiest career path, but I do think that passion helps a lot.
It's a lot of persistence and just keeping after people and following up. But luckily, we have had a certain number of our properties have come on market. So that did enable us to actually buy properties without just keeping after people for years and years. But both methods work on and off market.
Yeah.
Do you think you need to have a vision in order to develop in downtown?
I think at this point, yes, because it's not formulaic. It's not a 10-acre shopping center where you're supposed to have this drugstore and this grocery store and this apparel store. There's a model for that. It's been replicated worldwide. There's not a model for the type of work you're doing or what we're doing. There might be more so of a model, but it's still a little bit outside the norm.
Do you think you need vision, Reza, in order to do this work?
I think you do. I think you need a vision. I'll add one thing to that. I think you definitely should have some passion because it's not always the easiest thing. I want to add one thing, if it's okay, back to the conversation that we just had. Speculators, we talked about that. I think there's one other aspect that's probably the same in Bakersfield, and that's there's building and also landowners that have had property for multi-generation, a long time. Mm-hmm. And one thing, or there's many things, but one of the things that definitely holds things back that I've noticed over the decades is that as things happen, people think their property is just going to be more and more, but the problem is it's never enough. So they hold, and they hold, and they hold. And it's usually, sometimes it's a passing, but then someone might still hold, or someone's, now they're out of town, they don't want to deal with it, so then they'll sell. So speculators are definitely a part of the problem, especially these days, and even for the last 10 years, but it just gets worse and worse. But that's another, I think, part of the problem, where there's property that has been in either families or held for so long that aren't getting kept up, that aren't being maintained, and that are just holding out. And the more that happens, they always think that it's just going to become worth more.
We conclude these podcasts each week with what we're loving this week. I'll go ahead and start. I'm a giant nerd. And at the end of the year, all of the major publications release their lists. 10 best books, whatever the movies. I don't buy fully into the list, but I like to argue with people about the list. So this is argument season for me. You know, what are the 10 best books? What are the 10 best movies? I was reading a list. It was 10 best documentaries. I watched one. It's called Predators. And it was a behind the scenes documentary of the show To Catch a Predator. Do you guys remember that show where Chris Hansen would go into a room, they lure someone in there? That was wild. That was a wild documentary.
Adding that one to my list.
Yeah, pretty cringy, but definitely I was glued to the TV. The end of the year list, it's a fun time just to review the year and see what art you missed, what movies you missed, what books you missed, what music you missed. And so that's what I'm loving this week. Johnny, what about you? What are you loving?
Oh, sorry, this is always a struggle.
Can we pivot?
No, it's fine.
You're ready?
Okay. I have like 15 things. I know. I wrote them out.
Perfect.
I love that. I made a chocolate espresso pie for Thanksgiving, and it was a hit with my mom, which is really difficult to achieve. Mm. So, it was delicious. It had 3 layers. It was very difficult
to make.
What
kind of crust are we talking about? Crust is key.
It called for a chocolate graham cracker crust, but it didn't have chocolate graham crackers, so I used like the Teddy Grahams that are chocolate.
Just graham. Yeah. That's good.
It worked. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Each layer was really difficult, but it came together. And then my mom ate pie, and my mom and I ate pie while we discussed sin for a whole hour.
Sin, S-I-N? The different aspects of sin?
As you were sinning. I don't know.
Yeah. So
gluttony.
It was truly, that's good. Truly, that's it was good. What we discussed.
What a fantastic Thanksgiving.
Amazing. Sin. Wow.
Anna, that's deep. Anna, what are you loving this week?
So many things. I have. So I really like the hot Figgy Smalls, the coffee at Reverb Coffee.
Like this hot new coffee Figgy shop. Smalls?
They make their own fig syrup.
Oh.
And they have little anise on top. It's amazing. That I'm not even good into lattes, but this is my new thing.
Wow. Is that seasonal or that's year round?
They better have this all year. Okay. I don't know. Okay. They have it cold, so I think they're going to have it all year.
Stand from the store.
It's a new coffee shop in the ground floor of the Woolworths building of all places. But there we are. I like the new Lily Allen album. How many things am I allowed to list?
You can go as long as you want.
It's so good. I heard that she's a little unhinged.
Oh, it's unhinged.
I can't wait.
It's unhinged. Yeah. I listened to it with my three kids, which is probably not great parenting. It's fine. But it's fine. I can't believe I just admitted that on here.
There is editing.
It's a little embarrassing. It's so good, though. I like the new renderings of our new project that just came out that we haven't released yet, but I'm like so obsessed with the new renderings. It's killing me that I can't just show them to everyone. That's something I love. That's probably good, right?
Yeah, no, I love good. How much
I
you love.
Keep going.
Yeah,
I can keep going. I'm awesome. Trying to think. There's a new restaurant going on. Literally, there's a new restaurant being built, and I love the green chairs inside. They're so pretty. Okay, yes. That's it. I'm sorry.
That's right. A really great thing to love. I love little details like that.
My favorite thing is Jordan's monthly book list.
Oh, yeah. God.
I live vicariously through you about all the books that you're reading. I'm like,
it's like the one email he reads top to bottom. I see him over there. I'm like, what are you doing? I'm reading Jordan's email.
So every month for the last 8 years, I've sent out, it's Steven Soderbergh does this. It's like a cultural diary. It's like what you consume. And I read a lot. And so I just list the books and have a little paragraph below. And I've started including movies. And
we've gotten some ideas. We've definitely read some of yours.
It's really good. Because of you. And I was thinking of you guys this week when I was watching that movie that is like a basically like a film version of The Making of Breathless. Mm-hmm. And I think I remember watching a lot of Godard with Austin. Back
we've
in
already
the
added that to our queue. So we'll be watching that soon.
Reza, what are you loving this week?
I'm loving a lot of stuff. I'll start with the colors everywhere. It's just been like a blanket on the ground at home, which is just pretty. I'm loving that. I'm loving Craycroft broke ground today after backburning that.
Really?
Backburnering. Yeah. Today.
Congratulations.
This morning. Thank you. I paused that project so many times over the years going, this is busy. Too busy. So finally.
What's it going to be when it's finished?
6 units, lofts in the back, and then the old historic house is turning commercial. It's just kind of seismic and a retrofit and a whole lot of love. Need to find the right tenant for that. So this week, I'd say those are the main things. There's a building I'm super excited about that I won't mention that's closing escrow downtown this week with a good friend of mine. I'm super excited about that. We'll talk soon about that. Yeah, it's been a good week, the last couple of weeks.